The next case is 07-1069, Leonard Maynard versus Eaton Corporation.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Harry.
Counsel, let me wait till I call on you, please. The counsel's ready to... I'm sure she wants to take notes on your argument, so give her a chance to...
Jump the gun too quick.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Quick.
All right. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Harry Quick. I represent Eaton Corporation, the defendant, the appellant in this case. Case is here because there's a conflict between the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, the Eighth, and the Tenth over this issue of what do we do when the legislature changed the interest rate on judgments? We know that there was no interest on judgments in tort cases at the common law. The legislature decided in its wisdom that the rate would it changed several times. As of the date that this case was tried, it was 10%. After the case was tried, but while the case was still pending on appeal, the legislature changed the statute to bring Ohio into an interest rate that tracked the federal short-term interest rate. And because it made sense because of the time value of money. That way, no one gets a windfall one way or the other. The central fact or the central issue in this case is, was this case pending? This court has held that when a case is on appeal, it's pending. The Third Circuit got it wrong. The Eighth and the Tenth Circuit cases, both were issues that related to, there was a judgment, the case was still pending, the legislature changed the interest rate, and the Eighth and the Tenth said, we're going to apply the interest rate that tracks the federal short-term fund rate. And so it seems to us that it's really a no-brainer. The one issue that I would bring to your attention, it's not part of the certification. I have no right to ask for it, but I think the people of Ohio need to know, will the court adopt a static rate or a variable rate? However you decide that issue is of course, it's of some importance to Eaton Corporation, but we need to know what each time the interest rate changes and the commissioner changes the interest rate, we need to know, is that if the case is still pending, will the interest rate change? And I think that's an important issue. It's part of the issue in this case, although it's certainly not part of the certification that you granted, and I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Quick. Ms. Noel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Lara Noel, and I represent Leonard Maynard, the appellee in this matter. The issue is not whether or not this case was pending on appeal. The issue is, what does Revised Code 134303 say? And Revised Code 134303 says that when the monies become due and payable, and that is when judgment is rendered, that is the amount of the interest rate at the time. At the time that the monies became due and payable was when the judgment was entered in this case on April 4th of 2003. And at that time, the former Ohio Revised Code Section 134303 was 10% post-judgment interest. The language of the code section at issue here, former and amended, is clear. All this court has to do is look to the wording, the plain meaning of the language of the statute. The Third Appellate District got it right. The Third Appellate District in Maynard v. Eaton Corporation said, at the time the judgment was rendered, the interest rate was 10%. Therefore, the Third Appellate District awarded 10% interest on the jury verdict.
But isn't the issue also whether the General Assembly can change that interest rate at any time, and what is its impact on a case that's pending?
Well, the issue, Your Honor, is not the General Assembly can change when they change the law, but the way that the General Assembly changed the law in this case was still the date that the day of judgment rendered. That language, judgment rendered, is in both the former and the amended. It's still applied the same no matter what. The legislature just said, we're going to change the amount or the percentage amount and tie it to the federal short-term rate. And that's what the legislature did when it amended. It didn't say that we're changing this for cases that when we move into to continue answering your question, Chief Justice Moyer, pending is the second preliminary issue. Where we get the word pending is from Section 3 of House Bill 212, the enactment clause. And pending is, there's been all kinds of definitions of pending flying around in the briefs. But operationally, pending is ends at the time that the judgment is made on the merits of the case, and that is when judgments render at the trial court level.
Well, is a case on appeal pending?
Well, we're getting into semantics and splitting hairs in this case.
What is your answer to that question?
I apologize. Pending on appeal is not the same as pending, is the appellant's position, because pending means that the merits of the case are still open. Pending on appeal is different because we have a judgment entry. The judgment has been rendered. And the appellate court is bound by what the record was at the time the judgment was rendered, what the issues are. While the decision by the trial court can certainly, or decision by the appellate court, excuse me, may certainly revise, amend, or even reverse, it is still relates back to the judgment rendered, which is in this case. If the Supreme Court decides a decision, makes a decision based on, in this case, it's still going back to the date the judgment was rendered in this case. And payment of the jury verdict and the interest still relates back to the date the judgment was rendered in this case.
The reason this becomes important is that the uncodified language of the House Bill 212, as you are undoubtedly aware, provides that in actions pending on the effective date of this act, the interest rate provided in of 1343.03 shall apply up to the effective date of this act, and the interest rate in 1343.03 as amended shall apply after that date, which seems to indicate an intent on the part of the General Assembly to have two separate dates. One up until the date of that act, and a separate rate after the effective date. Do you agree with that interpretation?
Yes, it indicates that on its face, Your Honor.
Okay.
But what it would say to that is 1343.03 also covers prejudgment interest. And while that's not at issue here, part of that, if the case is pending, where it hasn't been, a judgment has not been rendered, and then the judgment is rendered and the prevailing party requests prejudgment interest, then at that point, the pending comes into issue. But as far as post-judgment interest, the case is not pending at the point that judgment is rendered. And pending is really the second step to the analysis here. It's really quite simple. It's quite simple because the plain language of 1343.03 states it's the date that the monies become due and payable. The court in the Maynard case ordered payment of the jury verdict on April 4th, 2003, and that was well before the amendment of the statute, so it was no longer pending.
Counsel, let me, if I could, suggest a third option here and see what your response is to it. Considering the language that the General Assembly put into temporary law to sort of govern the transition between the fixed interest and then the flexible interest, in actions pending, wouldn't really the practical definition, because it doesn't define pending, be judgments that are unpaid, not whether judgment has been rendered, not whether they're on appeal, but whether they're unpaid. And if they're unpaid on the effective date of the statute, you'd get the fixed rate up to that effective date, and assuming it's still unpaid, you'd get the flexible rate after that effective date. Wouldn't that really be the practical reading of this section? What's your view on that?
I think I'd have to disagree with that, Justice Cook. The problem with that is, in practicality, what post-judgment is, the purpose of post-judgment is basically payment for the non-prevailing party for its use of the money that belongs to the prevailing party. And at the point that judgment is entered for the prevailing party, it becomes the property of the prevailing party, just like because...
But it hasn't accrued. The actual interest hasn't accrued. If the prevailing party, or if the party that owed the judgment had paid it off, they wouldn't pay, interest, a year down the road. They'd only pay to that particular time. So there maybe wouldn't be any post-judgment interest. So, which seems to me, again, to play into the practical effect of the wording of this, it means unpaid.
Well, respectfully, Justice Cupp, I disagree, only because the plain language is pretty clear, but if we have to go into the word pending here, it is inconsistent. Section 3 is inconsistent with the plain language of Revised Code 1343. And what hopefully this court will do is bring that into consistency so it can be read parametrically in harmony with 1343.03 and state that the date that the judgment is rendered is the case, the post-judgment interest begins to accrue at that amount on that date. And further support for this is the fact that the legislature says that the interest rate on the date that judgment is rendered continues until the case is over, until the money is paid. But that's despite the fact that we have a variable interest rate based on the federal short-term rate. So that's why I would disagree with your third scenario as being practical in this situation.
The appellant, in its reply brief, as you know, cites us to Van Fossen, in which we said pending means during a direct appeal as a right to a court of appeals, causes pending until entry of final judgment by the appellate court. What's your response to that?
I'm sorry. Did you finish your question, Your Honor? My response to that is that the legislature, we're looking at the language of the legislature here, and the legislature has been amply able to include the words, including appeal, if they have put the word pending into their language.
But we assume that the legislature is on notice or takes notice of our opinions. That was a 1988 opinion, I think, Van Fossen. Wouldn't we assume the legislature assumes that we know what pending is? We've defined it, so does the legislature then have to define it again for us?
Well,
ideally it would. It would.
Yes, Your Honor, because it's, as you well know, the law is constantly in flux, or for a better phrase, it is changing, and the legislature changes with the people in the legislature actually writing these bills. So yes, the legislature, and given their past practice, I would expect that they would use the word including appeals to mirror your language in Van Fossen had they intended to do that.
So, counsel, you're saying basically if there's language and it becomes a final appealable order, then it's no longer pending. Is that correct?
If I understand your question correctly, Justice O'Connor, it is that the moment that the judgment is rendered, it is no longer pending. Did that answer your question?
Well, I'm presuming that when the judgment is rendered, you would agree that it's when all matters are disposed of, all issues are disposed of on the trial level. Then it becomes a final appealable order, and according to your analysis, that terminates its status as pending.
Yes, Your Honor, I would say that with the caveat saying that all the merits have been have been the merits of the case have been decided, prejudgment interest is not necessarily a merit of the case. So if there was something similar to that open, then no, but then yes, it is final appealable order, and the judgment rendered is that date is no longer pending.
So you're saying that the final judgment, the disposition of all merit issues, transfers or terminates the pending status of that case?
Correct, Your Honor.
So you're equating the termination of pending with the issuance of a final appealable order?
Yes, Your Honor.
But a final appealable order only allows the door to be opened to the appellate level.
Yes, Your Honor. And at the same time, as I previously discussed, the appellate court and basically any subsequent actions relate back to the date the judgment was rendered. What was the record at the date the judgment was rendered? The judgment may certainly be amended at some point, it is not going to be open. There's no new evidence that can be brought in.
And I understand that, but if you look at Section 3, and if it didn't have the word pending, and its application to cases that are pending, then I think you'd have a much better argument. But because it has the word pending in it, I think that poses some pretty insurmountable problems here.
And Ms. Knoll, when you look at the case of a judicial campaign complaint against Burrick, another case that the appellant has cited in the reply brief, didn't we hold that pending includes actions in which the trial court has concluded but from which an appeal had not yet been taken as within the term pending?
Again, Your Honor, I believe that was the holding, if I remember the brief correctly, to answer your question. But the problem here is number one, the language of the statute is very plain, is very clear, and that's what we're bound to. Section 3 is the uncodified law, which for some reason, some of the appellate districts in the state determined they needed to go to for whatever reason. But that's what is binding for us is the actual language on its face of Ohio Revised Code 134303. And so we don't even really need to get to the question of pending because, and again, I will tell you that the amended 134303 says the same thing, the date that judgment is rendered. So, and the application of 134303 as amended is the same, that even though there's a variable interest rate in accordance with the federal short-term rate, it's still, you could hit the day that it's 4% or the time period that's 4%, and that's what it is, whether or not it goes up to 10% or goes down to 2%. So the pending is the second question, and what needs to happen is that the Section 3 of the House bill or the enactment clause here needs to be harmonized with Section 134303, the plain meaning.
Ms. Knoll, does this record contain what the rate is determined pursuant to 5703 on the date the judgment was rendered?
Our record? I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't.
Does the record in this case reflect what the interest rate was as calculated pursuant to 5703 on the date that the judgment was rendered?
The date the judgment was rendered in this case was 10%.
That was pursuant to 134303.
Yes.
But the amendment to 03 says that it shall be calculated at a rate determined pursuant to 5703 on the date the judgment was rendered. And what I want to know is, does this record contain any reflection of what that rate was on the date the judgment was rendered?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay. I apologize.
You've used your time, Ms. Knoll.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Quick, you saved over 12 minutes of your time. It's a rare event here.
I'm not going to waste this court's time. The questions that you put to counsel for the appellee had a question mark at the end of it, and for me to repeat that and put a period at the end would not seem to be a good use of your time. In response to your question, I'm not sure that this issue depends on whether the judgment was paid or not. I think the issue depends on whether the case is pending. And when the jury verdict was announced, the case went on appeal, and the case was pending, and still is pending. And this court has held that when it's on appeal, it's pending. You can't say, well, pending means this here, but man, the legislature really didn't mean to say pending when you're looking at this issue over here. This court has said time and time again that the engine that drives interpretation is the plain language of the statute. If the legislature wanted to put pending means this here, but it really means this over here, it could have done so.
In the opening portion of your argument, Mr. Quick, you addressed us and I assumed from that portion of your argument that you agree that the rate of interest on this judgment up until the date of the amendment is 10%.
Yes.
Do I understand that correctly?
Yes.
And then as of the date of this amendment, what is your position with respect to what rate is in effect and how long it lasts?
I don't remember the exact percentage. I'm saying that's the issue I brought about the static versus variable.
That's why I asked you the question.
As long as the case is pending, as the commissioner changes the rate changes.
So it's your view that is not a singular rate, but that it will change annually according to the determinations made pursuant to Revised Code Section 57.
That would be my position, so long as the case is still pending.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Quick. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.